Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Matt Wasko, and we have a very special guest today. We have Jordan Mercurio-Lewis with us. She is a nutritionist. She's got a ton of knowledge in the nutrition field, and we're going to pick her brain about all things nutrition today.
Yeah, I've been talking to her for about a month now, trying to secure a time for her to come on. So if you've listened to the previous podcast, I've been noticeably excited to have her on.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Should be super interesting. Before we dive in, we're going to hit our Fit Focus just like we do every week. And this week we have a nutrition-based article study that we found. And the headline of this article reads, "Switching to a protein-rich diet may change gut bacteria and aid weight loss."
Right.
So this is an interesting conclusion of a study, because we obviously talk about protein-rich diets all the time on this podcast.
All the time.
Not necessarily something that you find in the mainstream that much, but this study found a lot of added benefits of that protein-rich diet, specifically when it comes to the gut microbiome and improving the bacteria in the gut.
Well, we should probably also give a little description what microbiome is. A lot of people probably don't know what that is. So the microorganisms that are in your body, that they help with bodily function, digestion, mental health, and other bodily functions. So microbiome is very important as far as making sure that you are eating healthy.
Yeah. Are you surprised by the results of this study, Jordan?
No, not at all. But it is, because people talk about carbs and fat so much in the media, I think that whenever people associate protein, they often associate, especially as females, like bulkiness, or they associate it to lifting or working out only, and not all of the added benefits that it can have in weight loss. So
absolutely.
And really its true role in the body. So I don't know how sciencey you want me to go, but good description on microbiome. I liked that.
I tried. You can make it real complicated, or you can get real in depth and then lose everybody. So
yeah, no, but the mental health, I was glad that you brought that piece in, because it does play a big part. It's your second brain. Your microbiome is your second brain.
Yeah, that's I like that.
That's good.
That is good.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that I found interesting about what you just said about eating protein for weight loss, which is absolutely, because it's a satiating type of one of the micronutrients. So it's real important that we utilize protein to actually lose weight.
Well, yeah. And whenever your body is going through its burning process, because a calorie is a measurement of heat. So whenever it's going through the process of digesting different macronutrients, I'm assuming most listeners know, macronutrients being carbohydrates, fats, and protein, your body actually burns the most calories digesting protein.
Yeah.
And so whenever you think about your total daily energy expenditure through just like your regular BMR and what your body needs, protein's truly like using the most calories out of that whenever you're going through the digestive process, followed by fats, then by carbs. Right. So, and then alcohol is also its own macronutrient. So it's also in there and digests far slower than all of them.
And I know, like with when the body breaks down, like red meat, for example, the body heats up. Mm-hmm. So it's burning more calories.
Yeah, the meat sweats.
Yes, yeah. Meat sweats. Yeah. What about, protein and like eggs and Greek yogurt?
Or what's like protein powder.
Yeah, yeah, so protein powder is a little bit different than eggs would be, because there's no fat in it. So whey protein, like an isolate, is digesting very quickly quickly for a protein. There's nothing to slow down the absorption of it. But with an egg, it's going to digest at a slow rate as well, because it has almost equal fat content to protein content. And I don't know how you guys talk about eggs in here. Are you guys pro-egg?
Pro-egg.
We love
eggs. Okay, yeah. Good. Lots of you know, yeah. too much cholesterol and all of those things, which yeah. actually the body needs cholesterol. So, yeah, a big fan of the Greek yogurt. And then the Greek yogurt actually has a fair amount of carbs in it, too. Yeah. So it's really like a well-balanced, but it's going to not work as hard as a sole protein with the 20 amino acids, like a chicken breast or a steak for that matter. So it's going to even out in the digestive process, considering Greek yogurt doesn't really have much fat unless it's like a full fat Greek yogurt, which right. most people trying to lose weight typically don't buy a full fat Greek yogurt. They're buying the, you know, low fat.
So what's your, I'm sorry, actually I'm skipping our Fit Focus cause I was like ready to ask her a lot of questions. But on a side note, you mentioned BMR.
Yeah.
Right. So, I've noticed when people lose weight really, really fast, mm-hmm. like let's say they lose 30 or 40 pounds inside a month or two.
Yeah.
But their BMR doesn't know that, and they're still trying to eat like they were 30 or 40 pounds ago. So that's right. why losing weight slowly allows the BMR to stay with that, and you learn the discipline in your BMR. You're not as hungry if you lose it slowly.
Right. And whenever you get to like a number calorically that you're eating that's close to your BMR, let's say you stall, because after you lose 30 or 40 pounds, that's a good drop. And so you are going to plateau to a certain degree. And once you have hit a number that low, then your body's really going to struggle to lose weight because it's just needing calories to keep up with your BMR.
Right.
That's to do daily function. That's to have all of your organs and everything work properly. So whenever you're going below that threshold or even coming close, you don't really have much room to then drop further to continue losing weight. So that's where I often tell people to, one, not get very close to their BMR for a long period of time. I do a metabolic reset for my female clients, which is 4 weeks. And for most, we're pretty close to their BMR calorically. But after that, we stop. We add back in, we go back closer to an amount for exercise, because your body will get used to that lack thereof and start to hold on to those calories to just right. perform your BMR functions. So, I try to tell people, you don't want to drop below that. Then you're really getting into like an HCG diet that's going to take a long time to refeed and start to get to lose weight.
Right.
Regularly again, without playing the yo-yo of lose, gain, lose, gain.
Lose, gain, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which lots of people struggle with if they're trying to lose a large amount, because fat cells are not, you don't get more fat cells. People gain weight by the fat cells that you have growing. So if you ever like think about how did somebody get to my 600-pound life, those fat cells are so susceptible once they have grown that's how somebody gets there. So you don't gain more fat cells. Your fat cells grow. It's a size. Yes. Yes.
I don't think I knew that.
I did not know that either.
No.
I had a question. What would you say the role of preserving lean body mass plays in keeping that BMR high?
So the more muscle mass that you have, the more you have to work and burn. So I think that's a great question, because somebody could weigh 187 pounds and have 14% body fat. Let's just use a male. I'm not talking about a female. We don't want any females at 14% body fat, unless you're stepping on stage. Or you can have somebody that's 187 pounds and 35% body fat. The body is going to use those calories completely different. And the person at 187, 14% body fat, they are going to have a higher BMR because the body is utilizing more of those calories and having more to burn with more muscle mass. So your body's working harder. It's what metabolism is. So right. you have a better metabolism at a healthy body fat percentage.
And really, that's essentially because as you have more muscle mass, you're contracting more muscle mass. It takes more calories to move that mass.
Correct. Correct. And if you have a low body fat, more muscle mass, I would assume you're probably working out a lot. So you're also putting your body into a catabolic state a lot, which is, you know, eating up a lot. It needs more. It needs more to be refueled and then be able to perform function the next day, next time you do it. So yeah, I don't always focus so much on body fat percentage, but definitely staying within a healthy range plays a big part on your BMR and your metabolic rate.
Right.
And you have to eat plenty of protein
Correct.
In order to keep that lean body mass high. which goes back to our study.
Yes, go back to our study. Yeah. I directed us off of it.
No, you're good. But you eat plenty of protein. That keeps your body mass high, your BMR higher, and all of a sudden you're losing more weight.
Right.
And, it all is interconnected.
Right, and I don't think I answered the protein part of your question. Yeah, I mean, because protein is, it's kind of like the glue to the body. It helps so much of your joints, your tendons, your muscles. Carbohydrates play a role in that, but without the protein, you're going to, I don't want to say struggle. It might take just a little bit longer. So, right. And people wonder like, well, how do vegetarians do it? It's where you pair and you create complete proteins within the body. You just typically don't have a source where you get all 20 amino acids in one food.
Right. Right. So, that's the advantage of meat. You get a lot of your amino acids in meat where you have to pull together a whole bunch of, black beans, I think has like 8 of the essential.
I'm not sure how many exactly, because I typically always pair, but you need 9 essential amino acids to be considered a protein. So if you can, again, do beans that have 8 and then even pair a rice, there you go. You have an essential, you have 9 and you have a protein. So it's a little bit more difficult, especially if you're just the average person. People think about like Mike Tyson, who pretty sure he's vegan, right?
I didn't know that.
I can't imagine him going into this fight with on a vegan diet. I know Arnold Schwarzenegger just went to a vegan diet.
I'll have to look that up. I'm almost positive Mike Tyson.
Wow.
I'd have to ask my husband. He would know. But, you have to look at yourself and not compare to that, because they have the people truly like serving them daily, making sure everything comes together. So as a vegetarian, if you're trying to lose weight, it comes more down to calories a lot of times, and then we can focus on, okay, let's build your muscle mass in more of a complex way with our complex proteins and making sure we focus on getting that in. So
yeah, and I think that's the one thing about vegetarianism. It becomes a lot more complex.
It does. Yeah. And people do it a lot of times for certain belief. But if it's just like hey, I think I'm going to lose weight because I'm not eating protein, I'm like, hey, I think we should.
Have you noticed a lot of the studies that come out, a lot of times it'll show a vegan diet or carnivore diet or whatever kind of diet it is, keto, whatever. The study shows them going from processed foods to those diets, not comparing the actual three together.
Yeah. So back, I haven't done it in so long. It's probably been 4 years. I used to do every Thursday something called Nutriflix. So I would talk about, it was kind of like a podcast. I'd talk about a topic, but I did it on live on Facebook. And I broke down. It had to have taken me 5 hours to watch. Have you ever seen What's the Health?
I don't think I have, no.
Which one's that?
That's the Netflix documentary where they literally compare eating an egg to smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Oh, I have read about that. I have not seen it.
So I watched it and I just took so many notes. I mean, I had pages of notes. You see these people like driving through McDonald's and then like comparing that to a vegetarian diet. There is absolutely, I can't really mention since I'm on a podcast, but I don't think she'd listen, and you can cut this part out. I have an acquaintance that might be in my family to an extended degree, and she just read a book. And so she has now removed meat from her diet because it is linked to cancer. And I have not seen her at one single restaurant ever get something that is not fried. And so that's the, a grilled chicken breast has now become unhealthier than having fast food that's vegetarian.
That's crazy.
But yes, most of those studies or anything that's promoted veganism or vegetarianism, most of the time they're actually funded.
Yes.
By a vegan activist group, which I think, What's the Health? I can't remember which group it was. But it was funded by a vegan activist group, and so was the one about Fairlife. Did you guys see that one where they went to like the Fairlife
plant? No, I didn't see that one.
That one was also funded.
Fairlife makes those protein drinks.
Oh, yeah. They taste like chocolate milk. I love them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That one was also funded by a vegan activist group.
Mm.
So you also have to look into those things. Where are your studies coming from? Where are they funded from? Are they legitimate sources or are they... they bias sources.
Yeah. And that's, we say that constantly on the podcast, like who's funding it and how was the parameters of the study set up?
Right. Right. The funding of it is a big thing. I mean, anybody can perform a study. I could go grab 10 people from here and say, hey, you want to do a protein study? And, I have no funding, so I could just give them chicken breasts, and I bet you most of them would lose weight. But what are the parameters? What's gone into it? Who's behind it, and what are they doing? There's a lot of things, but people don't talk about protein enough and the benefits of it.
Absolutely.
They really don't.
How do you think, like, the mainstream nutritional advice over the last few decades, how do you think it got so manipulated and so screwed up?
Oh, gosh. Definitely social media and the way that people want to be a part of something, especially now with social media. So going and saying that I'm going keto, you're now in a community of keto. You know, people draw to that and they connect with that. There's been so much misinformation. There's been so many processed things that are now, because they're low calorie or because they're a Weight Watchers point, people just, and it's who presents it. If you could have Dr. Oz present that McDonald's is the newest way to lower your cholesterol, and there is a generation that, because they trust and like Dr. Oz, that's gospel.
Yeah.
And then you have somebody else. You have a fitness influencer who says, you know, I eat 350 grams of protein a day. That'd be insane for a female athlete. And then all of a sudden, you know, all women need to go eat 350. So it's drawing to the people who have success, or the people who have, for females, typically have a certain body that other people desire. So then that works for them. It works for everybody. So it's a multitude of things, honestly.
I mean, this kind of shows the necessity to have someone like yourself, a nutritionist coach, that, I mean, we see it all the time as trainers, how much bad form is out there, and how the reason so many people get injured.
Right.
And then you, and we go out to social media, and you can see all the nuanced form or bad advice that's given by influencers.
Right.
There's some that are good and some that are bad. It's the same thing for you.
Right.
You know, and why, this, we talk about this all the time. It's kind of like the lady who drives up in a Porsche and has the Prada purse or you know, expensive gadgets, and she weighs 300 pounds, and her doctor says, you need to go and get to, in a health club, and then she feels like, well, this is too expensive.
Right.
We've got our priorities screwed up.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And not to mention, like, how, you know, you mentioned mental health earlier. Like, a lot of these things, you, as an influencer, there's a lot of good advice out there to get people started in the basics, and you want to just kind of be directed. Here's a good way, you know, like, if you're just trying to get on a healthy diet and you want to be simple, go to social media and see, oh, this person's eating this, I'm going to try it. But then lots of times you have the people who are watching it and think that's the only way. And then it's turning into disordered eating or a lot of rigidity around it, and the rise of eating disorders and mental health, you know, that's playing a huge part of it too. So it is, there's not a lot of balance shown also within those areas. So we're just kind of like going from one extreme to the total other extreme. People like going to extremes whenever it's dieting and trying to lose weight. Can't ever just be balance.
Well, and social media doesn't always show reality.
Oh, gosh. Right? No.
It kind of shows like a specific snapshot in time. And if you're comparing your average every day to someone's like perfect, best angle, all this stuff, it's just not, it's not realistic a lot of times. And so that's why I think people sometimes go to those extreme measures,
right,
or they get, you know, they feel bad about themselves and things, when in reality, right, that other person sometimes doesn't look that great either.
Right. You know? I mean, if my job was to go to the gym and just film myself working out all day, I'd probably be more fit than I am right now, but there's people with full-time jobs. There's people with kids. That's not what they get to do all day, but then they're comparing themselves to the person who is. And then they also don't want to take their environmental factors into consideration. They don't want to take their hormones, their lack of sleep, their lack of daily movement outside of the gym. They just want to see point A to point B, which is just how I eat and how I exercise, which there's a lot more that goes into it than that.
Well, you're talking about not real life. Well, I mean, it's not real life so much in what they're asking people to do, because we believe in the 90-10 rule. Try to be good 90% of the time. And that 10% of the time, you know, allows for it. We're human, right?
Yeah.
But if you go out and you see a lot of influencers, a ton of them are using like waste filters, they're like doctoring up all their, not only their photographs, but their videos.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a few. It's thousands.
Oh.
So it's like they're not even selling truly what they look like.
No, they're not. I follow a makeup influencer because I've always sucked at makeup. And so I'm like, I could get better. TikTok, I'll go to here. A video got leaked of her like getting ready, showing her outfit of the video versus like before the edit. And she was in a public place. And I mean, easily 2 to 3 like different dress size difference from her edited one to the reality.
Right.
And so you can do it in videos. It doesn't just have to be a photo. And people don't see that because now there's so much video content too. There's filters. There's all of the things. Right. So,
yeah. It's just like we're selling deception.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And believing it as reality.
Right. And that's what's putting all this pressure on everyone to be like what they see, think is perfect. I need to, you know, and they look at themselves and they put their own value on themselves, which isn't good. Right. They are valuable.
Well, absolutely.
Don't let someone else judge, you know, how you should be.
And I think it creates a little bit of like a false sense of urgency. They want it now. Like they want it really quickly. You know, how many times have we experienced people come into the gym as a beginner and want to be ripped with a six pack in a month?
Oh, I've heard it several times. Can I look like an Adonis in 8 weeks? I'm like, dude, it's not going to work.
So to give you guys a really good example, he was the former linebacker. His name's Josh Maga, and he was one of my clients. And after he retired, so I worked with him whenever he was playing and then worked with him in retirement and wasn't really planning on retirement until he called me one day and he said, hey, I have a job for you. He's like, I'm going to be the stunt man for Dwayne Johnson. I mean, and they do look, I mean, he's Samoan. They look very similar. And so he did a few movies. He did Jumanji. He did a Fast and Furious. And so he'd go back and forth to movies and they'd say like, hey, Dwayne's at 270 right now. And then a month later, they'd be like, hey, Dwayne's at 250 now. Well, he has all of these different resources that get him there, whether it be medically, I don't know, but also just like the tailoring that they get to the average person who lives a regular life.
Yeah.
And so in the comparison game, you have to think about your resources, your time, all of the other things that go into it, because we can't get from 250 to 270 in a month as an average person who has 3 kids and, you know, a wife and all of the things, not to mention flying back and forth to home and where they're filming. So versus somebody who all they do is be tailored to their body and how it looks and how they want it to look for a certain image on social media or entertainment.
And hence when people look at, you know, The Rock or some of these other movie stars, they're like, I want to look like that.
And that's comparing a pro athlete to a celebrity. So already somebody who is living a very blessed, glamorous life to somebody who then to the next extent is living even the next level of tailoring that they get to their body and attention on a level that we're trying to compare ourselves to.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you kind of bring a level-headedness to a lot of your clients of expectation.
Yeah. Whenever they walk in and I work with them, I say, hey, don't expect to lose 15 pounds in the next 2 weeks.
Right.
Now, there are people who they come in and they're 100 plus pounds overweight. And that is realistic by simply just adding water into their diets.
Right.
But the average, you know, mom who wants to lose 20 pounds, who already has her hormones messed up and says, hey, I want to lose 20 pounds by the end of this month. It's probably not very realistic, you know, until you have everything in check. And that's also a big thing that I like to tell people is everything in check? Are your hormones in check? Are you sleeping to a degree well before you try to go and just raise your cortisol levels more in dieting? Because while dieting is good and losing weight is good for people who need it, it also does raise your cortisol levels. And so there's a lot that goes into it.
I have to tell you, I see a second episode with Jordan. There's too much good content here.
I told you I could talk for a long time.
No, we like that.
One of the things that I was thinking about, you know, we brought back to like beginners coming into the gym. There's a lot of unlearning that they have to do the things that they've seen on social media, the things that they've tried before, the bad habits they taught themselves. That can take a while.
Yes.
I'm sure it's the exact same for you when you have a somebody new come in. How do you go about that like unlearning process and telling them, hey, a lot of this stuff you've been doing, a lot of this stuff that you've seen on social media, it's not true, and convincing them of that?
So I don't have to convince them much because lots of them know my history. So short synopsis, I'm recovered from 12 years of anorexia. So I, you know, dedicated a lot of my life to that, and I took a lot of my life. And so whenever I tell them that as the professional, I've been in their shoes, I can really kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, but empathize and feel the way that they feel to then know how to redirect them. And it's also about more so understanding that they may not be ready to let go of that, because it was probably at one time tied to a certain success. Like people who do Weight Watchers probably tie their success at one time to Weight Watchers, but then there comes a time where they're like, I don't want to do this back and forth yo-yo anymore. And so it takes a while, but it's about more so empathizing with them versus always trying to debunk what they believe. Like, I don't always just go back and be like, well, you're wrong, or this is the right way. It's about saying, okay, hey, I was in your shoes one time. I get the unlearning process, and here's how we're going to go about it. So more so not even educating them about the right way, but educating about how to turn your mind around in it, is something that I can.
Because usually over time, as you try to educate them in the right direction, some of the things that they're holding on to will just kind of fade away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Especially whenever they have a person. My husband says this, I say this, I am 90% therapist, 10% nutritionist for a lot of my female clients.
Yeah.
So once they have somebody to kind of get it out to, that's definitely, I would say, my strong suit in what I do is being somebody that they know understands versus somebody who's like, oh, they went to school to tell me how to eat broccoli and chicken. So, you know, having somebody that they don't feel judged by also, because food's a vulnerable thing. Nobody wants to come in and say like, hey, I eat like crap.
I think the success of someone like yourself or me and Parker is how authentic you are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, because are you there for them actually? Do you truly have a passion for these people? And like me and Parker would tell you, anytime someone has a big success in the gym, even if it's small, from the big body, you know, strong guy who's going to bench a lot of weight to the, the tiny girl who hits, you know, 20 pound dumbbells on a chest, you know, it's like, we're just as excited for both.
Right. Absolutely. And there is so much don't do this in nutrition out there. To be honest, even the person who is 100 pounds overweight, they probably know that's not what they're not supposed to be doing. So the last thing we need is don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. I follow somebody on social media simply for things I never want to be. And all she does is go into grocery stores and just tears food apart, and in a very derogatory way. Like, if you're eating this, then X, Y, and Z. And some of the times it's like things that, look, I don't care if anybody eats Cheerios. Like, why are you not eating Cheerios? Like, are we going to sit here and now worry about all of the things that we all have to worry about in food, and then you're just adding ones that the person who was eating a crumble cookie every night is now eating a protein bar, and you're not going to sit here and knock on the protein bar because it has xylitol in it. So it's just like, it seems like you can never really win whenever you're going to the social media side for it and the comparison side.
Right. It's like perfection is expected, but it can never be achieved.
Correct. Yeah.
There is no perfect diet out there.
No, there's not.
It's just about making better choices, improving on where you're at.
Mm-hmm. And sustainability.
Yes.
How can you sustain it for the rest of your life?
100%. That's the same concept we always teach people in the gym is we don't want you to come work out for 2 hours a day, 7 days a week for 8 weeks and then quit because you can't keep it going.
Right.
Let's find a plan that works for you. It works in your schedule.
Yep.
You know, same thing with eating. People ask, you know, how many meals should I eat a day? Right. Well, your schedule makes a difference.
Right.
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure you're not hard and fast to this many meals.
Absolutely
at these
not.
Times, whatever. Yeah. You can find a way to make it work for anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I have clients who are, they sit in on heart surgeries. Like, they're not going to be able to go in and eat six meals a day when they're in an OR for 6 hours. Like, what's going to fit your life and not feel like you're failing? If I give somebody something and I expect them to do it and they can't, lots of people are very black and white. They can't achieve it. They associate that to failing, which then goes to the, I can't do this, kind of send them into the screw it mode. And then they typically go to the total opposite end. And so that's also what you don't want to happen either. Like, what can you give them to where they feel successful on their terms, on their time? And it may look different than somebody else's success. It may not look like the perfect social media plate, but it's working for you and you can sustain it. And over time, you're going to have results, period.
So talk to me a little bit about your process here. So, and I can, I'm trying to imagine how you do a consultation, mm-hmm. right? So someone comes to you and you probably have a, maybe you just have it memorized or, but you probably have a step process of how you're going to evaluate what's going to work best for this person in probably somewhat of an order. So I'd be curious how, what your consultations look like.
Yeah. So I'm very, observant. So since I work with eating disorder clients, they are very manipulative. And I get to say that because I was that person at one time too. So I kind of take that observant approach, no matter if you're coming to me with an eating disorder or not, to analyze their one, willingness to change, to where are they coming from? Like, do they have the support at home? Like, I'm more so not asking about like, tell me about your bad eating habits. I want to hear about why you're wanting to do this. Like, what is your why? Like, not because you just want to lose 10 pounds. There's something deeper than that. Is it you literally dread getting ready every single morning for work, and then that's the tone that you set for your day? Do you have a spouse at home that's not paying attention to you? What is the why behind it? So we talk, I would say, 40% about food, 60% about life, to where I can see, okay, what's the next approach? And then when we talk about the 40% food, I'm making sure that we're, hormones are in check, like I said earlier, their ability to actually engage. Like, do you have the time? Do you have the effort? What is your process going to look like? And then making sure other environmental factors are also, okay, are we recovering from an injury that may have inflammation? Are you on any medication that also might cause bloating, water retention, whatever it may be, so that you don't come in and expect something whenever there's something else also going on. And that's also what a lot of people don't know about, is lots of times I'll talk to them in a consultation. They're like, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about my insomnia affecting my weight loss. Like, I'm still not eating, you know, I still only eat 1200 calories a day. Well, that's fine. Your cortisol levels are way out of whack. So really just also breaking down their base is what I do in a consultation.
So
just
you almost, because a lot of times people's eating disorders are going to be driven by pressures in their lives.
Trauma most of the
yeah.
time.
Yeah. And so you probably do an analysis of what their daily lives look like.
I always talk to the parents first. I always talk to the parents first. And then I talk to, I work with a lot of younger individuals. I have clients that are definitely, you know, in the adult age, but I always talk to parents first with eating disorder clients, and then I get to the client, so that I kind of have an idea of what's been going on and how to approach them.
So with adults, you don't talk to peers or anything like that. You just talk to the adults, and
because they're at an age where our lives are at similar places. Our day-to-day activity is typically the same versus an 18, 17, 16-year-old who's going to school and maybe not skipping, or maybe skipping lunch or whatever it may be, or acting out. They're still in their parents' home. Like, hopefully whenever I talk to somebody who's 30 and above, they're living a relatively normal adult lifestyle,
right,
to a degree. But if they're married, I'll always talk to their spouse. So if they give me the permission, obviously they're over 18, so I have to.
I think that's a pretty effective way to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's important. It's sometimes it's hard to read people. You know, mm-hmm. we found that definitely to be true. And by kind of getting the whole story, getting another perspective, because like you said, people with those disorders can be very manipulative.
Yeah.
They know how to protect that.
Yeah.
In front of other people.
Oh, yeah.
And it it's an extremely complicated thing, I'm sure.
Well, especially if you're dealing with, you know, young people, you know, because a lot of times they're probably not there for because they chose it, but because of their parents chose it, I'm guessing.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they typically are not putting themselves out to me. It is mom and dad who's brought them to me.
Then it's even harder.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes they're kind of defiant. You know, they're not even the ones seeking help.
Yeah, I've had a few sessions where all they did was stare at me for an hour. Like, just stare at me. And I stared back. I mean, I was that person one time. I'm embarrassed to say the person I was at one time in that time of my life.
Well, I think we all have periods in our lives that we're not too excited about.
Yeah.
But that's how you are so successful in being able to help these people.
Yeah,
you've been there. You've walked it. You've done it.
Yeah. In the eating disorder world, there's nothing like having somebody who can truly get in your brain because that's it. It really has nothing to do with the food. It is your coping mechanism, or it's a control that you didn't have at one time. So I always can see the light in my adolescent clients in particular, whenever they are like, whoa, like, how'd she know that? It clicks with them. So that's always when I've gotten through to the adolescent to some degree to where we can start. So it takes a while sometimes, or sometimes it can happen very quickly. Kind of just depends on their. I always like whenever I hear a adolescent client go to their parents and say, I need help. So that's huge. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Huge.
Talk to me a little bit about the Mavericks.
Oh, the Mavs.
So you are the nutritionist for the Mavericks hockey team?
I am. Yeah, I have been for, this was my sixth season. Yeah. So I started back in 2018. I got connected with the athletic trainer, Nick Potter. And I was really, I don't even know. I think I went there at one time. So fun fact, I actually created a protein bar. It was like on the shelves of like 24 different Hy-Vees. It was a lot of places. It got to the point where I had to either decide if I wanted to spend my career in distribution or, you know, just kind of keep it to however I could keep it. I had an investor. And so he was going to pull out if I didn't take the distribution route. And, he was an amazing mentor, but, I didn't want to leave this. Like, I didn't want to go spend my days in grocery stores. And after a long, it was a long process. We worked on that bar for 3 years, through our food scientists and everything. So I decided to stop that before we launched our third flavor. But needless to say, I think I was taking the bar to the team and then it just kind of started from there. So I go at the beginning of the season, talk to all the guys, just introduce myself as, you know, the nutritionist of the team. And then I typically go like one time a month, knockout, like just each guy will come in, we'll meet for 30 minutes, kind of like my normal clients. And they know they have me the rest of the season. If they ever need to text me, email me, come January or February, it gets pretty crazy. So I normally don't make it there, but come back around and do it all over again. And it's fun. The guys, they're young, most of them, lots of them have, an AHL career ahead of them. So if not an NHL career, for the much, much younger ones, like I'm talking 20, 21 years old. And they're polite and they are compliant. They live a very hectic, athletic lifestyle. It's not like a football player that plays one time a week. I mean, they're playing sometimes 3 or 4 games a week. So yeah, they're fun.
Well, and they had a very successful season this year.
They did have a very successful season. So this was the first time they've even made it to, pretty sure it's the first time they've ever even made it to the semifinals. So it was really cool to watch. And unfortunately, the team that we lost to, we had a lot of players come from. We also had our coach come from 3 years ago. So they're a good team that's been there. They knew what that part of the season looked like. And most of our guys are normally already at home. So back wherever they came from and waiting to come back in September. So we have a few guys actually that have AHL careers definitely ahead of them. So they'll go to, if they go to our affiliate, Coachella, because we're all, so there's the Mavs, there's Coachella, which is our AHL team. And then we're affiliated with the Seattle Kraken. So that's our NHL team. So that's kind of the, in hockey, you can go up and down. You can get called up.
Kind of like baseball with minor leagues and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I've never had anybody go all the way up to the NHL while I've worked there. But
what do you think it is in your approach that allows you to go from the overweight child all the way up to a professional athlete?
It's the difference between education and personal experience. So my education, my master's, my bachelor's degree is in health science with a dietetic internship. And then my master's is nutrition and human performance with an emphasis in sports nutrition. So I can work my brain on the sports side, schooling. And I mean, there are degrees where I was a college athlete myself. And then going back and using more personal experience on the eating disorder side. So I love, my ultimate goal probably one day is just to be, I'll always work with eating disorder clients on the side, but to definitely have a pro sports team of my own is my goal one day. So I love working in hockey. The guys, like I said, they're very polite. So yeah, that's my goal one day. Cause I like that side of getting to work my brain.
And what do you mean you want a team for yourself? What do you mean by that?
Have a full pro team, like be the dietitian of a NHL team or.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right, so we're ECHL. Yeah. Yeah. So
for a second there, I thought she wanted to buy one.
No, nope. Haven't had that much success. So nope. Not in that tax bracket.
So you said something, you went through your website.
Yeah.
And one of the things you mentioned was your grandfather.
Yeah.
And so when sometimes you mention your grandfather, you mentioned just kind of, I want to say you mentioned him in passing, but he was like an inspiration. It sounded like he was an inspiration.
Yeah. For you. And he's still alive. So yeah, he's, I've been very blessed to have all of my grandparents in my life for a long time. I've lost one grandfather out of the three I have. But this one I spent a lot of time with. He's technically my father's stepdad, but raised my father. And I lived with them for like 6 months while we moved to Kansas City. My parents were going back and forth. So I spent a lot of time with him. And he's the best. He always told me, be alert, don't get hurt. So I decided to tattoo that on my arm so that I always remember to make good decisions. But yeah, he actually on the health side of things, my whole life and most of his adult life has been diabetic, extremely, extremely overweight. And at the age of 65, decided he was sick of it and lost over 100 pounds and, is living an incredibly healthy lifestyle. So it's also a, inspiration that's never too late to start your health journey.
Right.
So, and basically by simple eating habit changes, and he would go ride a stationary bike for a little bit, but yeah, at 65 years old, he decided he wanted to lose over 100 pounds.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I guess that shows it can be done at any age.
Truly. Yeah. Yeah. And just taking it day by day. Truly. I mean, whenever you have a number like that, 100 pounds, that's daunting. So you got to break it down. You got to say, hey, let's work on the first 20. Mm-hmm. Let's not look at the whole picture. Let's set small incremental goals. So,
and consistency.
Yeah.
Because it takes years, you know, months, if not years, when you're when you have that far of a journey ahead of you. And, you know, if your mindset isn't to be in it for the long haul, you're not going
to
make it.
Right. And especially whenever, you know, to go back to the beginning, talking about muscle mass, like at that age, for him in particular, his muscle mass was very low. He was very unhealthy. He had no form of exercise he was ever doing. He worked a computer job. So his muscle mass was very low. So you also have to look at those things and your ability to digest the protein and all of the things. But I always saw him. He still ate, you know, my grandma's one of those people that walks up and she's like, I made 15 different kinds of cookies. You need to try every single one. And it's not asking, it's telling. So, you know, he still had it. He'd have a quarter of one or whatever and change the way of which his portions. I mean, he had easily two plates always, my whole childhood, huge plates. Mm. So changing the way he did it, not the foods always, especially in that generation, but yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what I've always told people is like, you have to still be able to fit yourself into the regular world.
Absolutely.
Like you can live for a while in this kind of side world where you have your perfect meals, you know, you never go out to eat, you prep everything,
right.
But eventually stuff happens that will take you off the wagon, so to speak.
Right.
You have vacations.
Right.
You friends want to go out to eat. Mm-hmm. Life gets busy. You know, not always is a meal prepped, and you have to figure out how to exist in this world, do some of those things, go out to eat, whatever, and do it in a manageable and healthy way.
Right. And it's also not about always going to the restaurant or going to the vacation and going from one extreme to the other. Again, it doesn't have to be a binger, and it doesn't have to be, I'm not going to have fun, I'm not going to have a glass of wine. There is an in-between. And once people can learn that, that's what I call intuitive eating. Like, I'm going to go here, and yeah, I'm going to get the, I don't want a salad today. I want a chicken club. But maybe I'm more full. Maybe I'm just going to stop versus, oh man, I didn't order the salad. So go ahead and bring over the cheesecake that I'm going to eat all of, because I've gone into that mindset. So if you can learn the balance and the intuitive eating, that is a huge thing too. And most people don't know how to intuitive eat. And that is eating without emotion.
And that's when it becomes a sustainable lifestyle for the long term.
Correct.
Once you've hit that point.
I've had very few clients. I've worked with over, whenever I was looking at my system the other day, I think it's close to like 700. So I've worked with almost 700 people, and I could tell you maybe 10% of them knew even what intuitive eating was, let alone how to do it. So
you're talking about disconnect. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
You're talking about disconnecting emotion from the eating.
Right.
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 Yeah. And that's
eating when you're hungry and eating when you're full.
And it's not only the connection to in my view, because I talk to my clients about this, it's not just disconnecting yourself from how food makes you feel, how, you right. know, like it's solving a problem from pressure.
Right.
But it's also, you have to, your friends can be bad influences.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, let's go do a binger, or,
right.
hey, you know, come on, just, you can eat this. I mean, right. you know, whatever. And you have to be able to say no.
Right. Because you want to also, you know, because you want to feel better the next day. You don't want to feel like crap. And it's also about, okay, yeah, I'm going to have this muffin right now because this is what I want. And then not 4 hours later saying, well, I had that muffin 4 hours ago, which really wasn't on a plan. So anybody ready for Taco Bell? Like, it just all falls back typically to a single time of which you felt around food that then takes the snowball effect however long.
And the other 90% that you're talking about, I've found that a lot of times when people have for expediency, because I don't know what would be a better word, an addiction mm-hmm. or addictive personality, and right. food is that.
Oh gosh.
That, you know, that yeah. mechanism. If they learn to diet, then that sometimes I've seen that addiction go to cigarettes, or I've seen that addiction go to alcohol. It hasn't. It's something is replacing the lack of eating.
Yes, there has been studies that I've actually dove into. It's been a long time, specifically about clients with anorexia, that once they get into recovery, they typically try to take their addiction somewhere else. And sometimes it just goes the total opposite to a different eating disorder. Or like you said, it could be money, it could be shopping, to a very addictive degree. So yeah, it's you're very right. It typically tries to.
How do you deal with that? Because you probably see that.
Yeah.
So how do you remedy that? Because you, like, let's say you get them healthy, but you see this other negative aspect popping up in their life, which right. isn't necessarily, maybe shopping is not, a shopaholic is not your field, but but the motivation to feel that addictive personality is something you deal with.
Right. Yeah. And it is normally something that I've never come up with anybody that's a shopaholic. It is typically something that is going to impact your life on a different level. Like you said, smoking, drinking, money problems. So I typically, you don't see it as much in the adolescents, actually. Because one, they typically don't have the money. And two, they're not the age where they can regularly go buy alcohol or cigarettes. Right. So that's very, it's not as much of a common issue as much in my adult eating disorder clients. And so they don't know. I don't bring up the way of which an eating disorder can switch to a different addiction until I see something else that they consistently talk about. because eating disorder clients love to put things into their head. And I can say this now, it is not an attention thing for most. But they do like that it makes them different, and it does have a certain, you feel a form of strength. Okay. I can say no to that piece of cake while everybody else is, you know, scarfing. So you are drawn to the attention that it brings you, but it's not an attention thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
So you like that it makes you different, but so once I start hearing them talk about something else that they're engaging in pretty consistently, then I start to bring that up, because if not, they're going to try to just say, okay, I'm going to work on my eating disorder now, but I need something else that becomes my identity. And that's what they're looking for, is a different place to put an identity.
Right.
So I don't bring it up until I start to see it.
That kind of puts it together for me when you said a different place to put my identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people, they want an identity.
Yeah, absolutely. I was always, for my high school career and then going into college, my identity was always tennis. I had a lot of high school success, and then, you know, my eating disorder came along, so that became my new one, because I ended up losing my scholarship because I had to go to treatment a few times, and so then that was my new identity. So my struggle was, okay, well then who am I as a normal person? Like, what's my identity? So yeah, that is a typical struggle, is where do they, what's the next thing? And young girls typically is what it is, then try to put it in the boys and things like that, but they don't have as many triggers to the alcohol and the cigarettes and the money, right, thing like the adults do.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I think the human condition is always seeking purpose.
Correct. Yeah. And lots of women find that in being a mom. And being a mom is amazing. I have an 11-month-old at home.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. He's amazing. He's huge. He's a monster. He's actually like 4 months taller. He's the age of like a year and a half. I mean, he's huge. He's a monster. So lots of women put their identity in being a mom, and they lose a lot of their self. So that's been a conversation I've been having with my husband lately, because we've been together for going on 12 years and we just had our first kid. So, that's something that I think that is an easy place to put an identity with an eating disorder. So it's accepted.
I would say that your son is very lucky to have a mother who is a nutritionist.
Thank you. I would hope so.
Because that is one thing I've noticed is, you know, adults, like, they have that freedom. They can choose, they can decide how they want to eat.
Yeah.
Kids don't really, they kind of mm-hmm. just eat what their parents give them. And you don't really get to choose where you're born, what family you're born into, and having parents that are going to be conscious of those health decisions is a big benefit.
And my husband and I grew up from totally different eating style families, and he's recognized that. My in-laws have recognized that for him. And, I don't quite understand walking into a gas station and like immediately wanting to go to the candy section. That was not how I grew up. But now that my husband's 35 years old, that's something that is still a thing, because his afternoon snacks after school was a liter of Mountain Dew and a pack of fun-sized Snickers.
Oh, yeah, it was a ton. I mean, I grew up like that.
See, and I was going to, like, my mom had some Goldfish or like one zebra cake out of the two packs. Like, but also we always had the balanced dinners. And my husband is actually the one who's also very like, I want to make sure that our kid knows what balance is, but has a much different diet. And he has had a lot of weight loss success. He initially back, whenever he went out on his own, lost 60 pounds. So, he's still at 35 trying to learn what that balance looks like. And it sticks with you. Those eating habits and the way that you always did them, they stick. So we're watching TV and he's like enamored by the Taco Bell commercial. Like, does that not look amazing? And I'm just like, I didn't even know the Taco Bell commercial was on. So
I'm going to go back 20 years here. Parker doesn't know this about me.
Oh,
this will be the first. He said, I used to be into M&Ms 20 years ago.
Oh.
Loved M&Ms.
Is that why he brought the peanut M&Ms that one time?
No, that was because of the study. Oh, yeah. But,
the study.
But, which we should bring that up, by the way, too. But anyway, No, but I was, when we grew up, my parents, you know, didn't have a lot of money, and, you know, and all my friends, that's what we did. We went down to the gas station, loaded up on the junk food. And, I remember when I was in cross country, I'd run to McDonald's, eat two Big Macs, and then run home. That's how crazy my metabolism was.
I used to eat Chipotle or, this was pre-eating disorder. I made the mistake one time of doing a burrito before a tennis match, like on a 100-degree day. And it's normally like 7 degrees hotter on the court. So that one didn't go over well. But I mean, I used to do like foot-long Good Sense sandwiches before. I mean, I've always had a good metabolism. Some people just don't. I mean, genetics do play a part to a certain degree. You can always work on changing them, but it doesn't mean that your body's going to look the same as somebody else for that matter. But yeah, your eating habits go with you. So my son is actually a better eater than I am, if I can be totally honest. He likes 100 more foods than I do.
You're 11-month-old.
Well, and I think that speaks to something we were talking about earlier, which was intuitive eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it kind of tells us we are born with that intuition and that instinct, and it's our habits and how we're raised that kind of pulls it out of us, and then we have to rediscover it again in our adulthood.
Yeah, it's true. My husband and I literally talk about that all the time, is we are born with the instinct to intuitive eat. And they just sit, eat, poop. Like, they don't even do much. They could easily boredom eat all day. But we have followed every 3 hour, every 4 hour eating schedule. And now I know he's only 11 months, but he knows that. He knows when he's getting his egg in the morning. He knows whenever it's time for some crackers or, you know, my goal was by 1 year old to 1 year old to try 100 different foods. So we hit that about a month and a half ago, and still incorporating those things so that he knows that there's options. He knows that, you know, he can have a bite of mom and dad's Andes if we're going. And that's something that we always want to know. I never want my son to come home and be like, hey, or come over to me at a party and be like, can I have the pizza? Never. Like, I never, ever want that. I want him to know, go grab 4 slices, buddy. But at home, we're also going to sit down and we're going to have a family dinner. And after school, I'm going to have, you know, a snack made for you that's well balanced. So I heard the term crunchy mom by my pediatrician. So
what's that?
Well, I didn't know that either. She asked me, and I was unaware of this term. So she said, are you a crunchy mom? And I said, I mean, I like baked Lays. and so that is not what that means. That means like you're very, I guess, granola, like very holistic. I'm going to say hipster, but like totally anti-vaccination. And I'm also the least political person you'll ever meet in your life. So you'll never catch me talking about vaccinations with another mom.
Right.
And so I was like, no, I'm not a crunchy person. I just care about my kids' health. And I feel like the balance of that, of food for kids, that is health.
Isn't it crazy though, that caring about your kids' health gets you that label?
Yeah.
People like assume.
Well, that's the problem in medicine today.
Yeah. I think it's the difference between like Western medicine and holistic, which I'm kind of in the middle. Like I go to a normal PCP. I take the typical processes with health. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to give my kids something with red dye all day, every day. So that's the separation of Western versus holistic and trying to do things a more natural way. Versus a more balanced way. And then there's obviously the other extreme where there's just really no effort and put into it every day is McDonald's and fend for yourself, whatever you can find.
Well, here we are, three professionals that are working in the fitness/health wellness arena. And we've had to do a lot of our own research to determine, excuse me, health, goodness, health and balance.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But then you think about what the everyday Joe has to deal with. Like, right. That's why you have the mass following, you know, The Rock. Well, he looks fantastic. I want to look like that.
Right. Yeah.
Or someone saying you shouldn't eat eggs.
Right.
You know, this is why you have all this sway in the culture, because you have major forces that are pushing processed foods,
yeah,
and pushing down the, you know, like red meat bad,
right,
eggs bad, dairy bad,
right,
you know, and the things that have been healthy for men for thousands of generations.
Right. And you see, just like you said, you see a person who's like the Rock. So you praise one side, but then you also see the other praise or attention, let's say attention drawn to my 600 pound life situation. Like, you don't see much about my 152 pound life where I just go and be a mom and do normal life. That's, you know, I mean, that's my life. Nobody cares, because it's not to an extreme.
Right.
And most people are not at that extreme, but they're trying to compare themselves to typically the more of the Rock style.
Yeah. The extremes are what sells. It's what right. gets views.
Exactly.
Nobody cares about normal
right.
or average.
Right.
You know, you've got to say something that's more extreme than the last person, you know,
right.
to get more views than them. It's this competition for views and for eyes and
right.
whatever's the flashiest thing and the craziest sounding thing is what gets the views.
Right.
And when people keep searching for that, that's when they get to these extreme situations when maybe it's okay to just not have a bunch of eyes on you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's a very good way to put it. I mean, I can't, all the time I get people sending me reels or TikToks. Is this true? Is this nutrition fact true? And there are many things that come down to science. Absolutely. But why is this doctor saying these things about eggs? Like, who is he comparing this study to? Because to that person, maybe it is true. To you, no, it's not. And so there's just so much lack of information. There's so much comparison. And I think that that's drawn probably the most attention to why people are doing it the wrong way. They're so confused. I often say, I am so thankful for what I do, because as a new mom, getting my postpartum body back, if I would not have had the knowledge to do what I needed to do, I would have felt so hopeless, like just so confused, so defeated. I'm never going to feel good again. Like 90% of the people who don't do this for a profession probably do. So it's just a very misinformed place that moves very quickly on to the next thing.
One, it's easy to just want to give up because it's so complicated, right. and there's right. so many different, every possible different view is out there being pushed in our face.
Right, exactly.
Somewhere. And it takes so much effort to parse all the information and figure out what actually works that it's just easier to throw your hands up in the air and say, I give up. I don't care anymore.
Well, and yeah, it typically comes because they have been contemplating something. They've been contemplating keto, or they've been contemplating the carnivore diet, and then they look up one thing and then they hear another and then they're just like, no, I'm done. Like, they didn't even get to it because they were contemplating health. Like, health is what made them not do it, if that makes sense. The contemplation of all of the misinformation or the conflicting information is what made them not do it. But what if there was just information that just applied to you? Like, you just, this is my life. I'm going to go do it in just a better way. I'm going to cut back on what I have been doing and progress from there. If I have a client who doesn't work out, I'm not going to tell them to go to the gym for an hour. I'm going to say, what can we do for 10 minutes a day? Well, Jordan, that's not going to get me anything. 10 minutes, it's going to get you into a habit until you do 20 minutes the next time and then 30 minutes the next time, something that you feel like you can sustain. But instead, everybody wants to draw to a template.
Sounds like you're trying to come to where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because,
yeah.
you know, I know that, you know, I'll take my wife, for example. She... get her to step in a gym. No.
Right.
So, you know, but a walk.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some on the floor cardio in our TV room.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That is coming to where she's at.
Right.
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 So I think what you're trying to, because, you know, the obviously we know the values of resistance training,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our opinion, resistance training is by far the most transformative thing you can do to your body
right.
with the support of cardio days. And, but not everyone, for some people, that's like climbing the Mount Everest.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you were to go to them and say, hey, you need to be in the gym 3 times a week, you know, and this is what you need to do, and you're looking at them and you can tell the mentality just is not there.
Yeah.
Then you're offering them something that'll get them maybe someday there.
Well, and you also have to, the mentality may be there also. You have to look at that side. They may be ready to go gung ho, But then the adrenaline, you know, after a couple of weeks of like the excitement of wanting to do it, you're all about it until it takes a little bit longer than what you expected, or you have to put in more. That's why the supplement industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's easy and it typically works pretty fast.
Right.
So people, you have to also analyze the angst in somebody and be like, okay, let's reel it back. Cause you are going to hit this time typically where you're like, okay, this is a little harder than like my gung ho has gone down a little bit. How do I keep it going?
So, that brings up a good point. Did you have a question?
Well, I was going to add in a quote I heard that I think sums us up very well. And it goes like this: motivation is what gets you started. Habit is what keeps you going. Yeah. You brought up habits and, you know, the motivation may get you started to getting in the gym 2 hours a day, but then it's not sustainable and you can't get that habit going. Right. But a 10-minute habit, that's something you could keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and slowly build from there.
Yeah. It's a very, my husband sent me that before because I'm not motivated for the gym many days of the week.
Yeah.
But it's a habit. I go and I feel good. And once I'm there, I do feel motivated because I remember how good it felt the last time. But the process of getting in the car and driving there, I'm not always motivated for. And so sometimes it's just about telling yourself, it's okay, I'm not motivated, but this is a process of my day. I can guarantee you that 90% of moms who listen to this are not always motivated every single day to mom. But you still got to do it.
It's a duty. Yeah. Yeah,
you still got to do it. I know you're comparing a habit of which you can do versus a child's life, but that's the way you can look at it to some degree. Is this is part of my day? This is what I do. So,
well, I mean, it's just being human, right?
Yeah.
And I think Parker made some. Actually, you kind of summed up what I was going to say a little bit, but what I see a lot of times is they start with that adrenaline. They're mm-hmm. all excited, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And me and Parker have seen that multiple times where they come into the gym. A lot of times it's after a divorce or after they've broken up with their girlfriend or something else that's traumatic. And so they like, I gotta get in shape, or for whatever reason those things too those connect. And so they're coming into the gym, and I know that this is a high.
Yeah.
And so we immediately start talking to them about developing a habit.
Right. Yeah.
Immediately. And the mindset it takes to develop that habit.
Right.
And so, because a lot of times if you don't try to start conditioning them, they'll be there for maybe 1, 2, 3 months, and then they start disappearing.
Right. Exactly. And it's okay to show up some days and be like, I don't want to cook today. I'm really low on energy. I slept really bad. I'm here. What can we do that still helps me move forward, but maybe it's not always giving my all? Because you also never want to set them up for a place again of failure. And so feeling like, hey, I got in and did better than I typically would, so for that I'm happy, is really what I try to give them. Hey, it's fine if you didn't cook the rice. Go buy some of the minute rice. Oh, I can do that? Yeah, it's rice in a cup. Like, oh, I can go grab Chipotle. Sure, that's fine. But ask them to leave off the 2 pounds of cheese, you know, that they put on it, or learn the moderation of anything better than what you would typically do is the best way to get people there. Especially, you put it well, especially whenever they come off of the high. And that's anywhere in life. The gym, something that you want to buy, something that you want to engage in. Everybody has a moment for something. I'm all gung-ho. I want to do this. This is so cool. This is going to be so great. My sister Jensen, her and her husband bought an RV. We went and visited them. We were all down in Springfield and they were at a campsite, and I got in the car and I was like, Jason, I want an RV. Like, whole way home, looking at different cars. Like, we got to get a bigger SUV. We need this size because we're going to bring the dogs. Like, all about it. I have not thought about that RV ever since.
Yeah.
Like, I was on a high of the RV life. Like, mm-hmm. we can go here and there, and then it comes down, you know?
Yeah. It's like when you watch a movie and right. it inspires you to like change careers. Right. And the next right. morning you're like, oh yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems, yeah, exactly. I'm, I am the queen of that. And it's also gotten me many animals. Yeah. Yeah, done with animals. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I apologize. I was too excited to have her on, and I derailed this right from the beginning. So that's the first time that's happened. But
no, that was a fantastic discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is way better than the mice study.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get into it, and I was just like, here we go.
Yeah.
yeah, no.
One thing I wanted to bring up, I want to make sure I get this in.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time, but I want your perspective on it.
Okay.
The obesity epidemic in this country, in this world, mm-hmm. that's been progressing and getting worse decade after decade, mm-hmm. almost no matter what is tried.
Right.
What do you think, as a nutritionist, is the driving force behind this epidemic?
More emotion, like stress. 100%, I think it is stress, because I'm not really going to get into like financials, because at this point, the other night, Jason and I said, let's do an at-home Chipotle night. Like, let's go get that. We have a cut of beef that we really like. Throw it in the air fryer. I'll make some cilantro lime rice. Like, let's do it. By the time you go to the grocery store and buy all of the things to do a homemade Chipotle night, it is literally the exact same cost as, if not more, of going and buying Chipotle. So the cost can be a factor if you feel like you need to buy all of the different things that are packaged gluten-free, dairy-free, keto. Like, yeah, that stuff really does add up. But I firmly believe that it is stress, because stress then affects the sleep. It affects the cortisol. It affects the hormones. It affects your motivation, your emotion to be able to even get up and do a lot of life. It's led to a lot of depression in jobs, marriages. So I firmly believe that it is the stressful lifestyle that people are living, because it only gets more stressed, even though we only have more like things that help us with it. We have more utilities and tools to change it than we ever have. But then we also have more tools and utilities to also engage in all the unhealthy things than we ever have. So
and we talk about that a lot.
Yeah. And so I think that it is 100% stress. I really love when my clients go and get their cortisol levels checked, or I just do a simple like evaluation. Hey, do you constantly feel puffy? Are you waking up in the middle of the night? How's your hair loss? Where are you bloating? And typically whenever we can really reduce their cortisol, then a lot of things change from there. I have a client, she's hired me to just be around, you know, for literally like as long as I am in this career. And we've worked together for a long time. She's had a lot of great success, but she had an injury and had to have surgery. And we, after that, she was able to go back to all activity, but we were struggling to even get this scale to move. And I was like, we need to work on sleep. Like, we're stopping food right now for a second, and we need to work on your sleep. She went, had a sleep study done, got some things to help. And she's lost 37 pounds since the beginning of this year.
Fascinating.
And has been sleeping through the night for the first time in, I think it's like 2 years that since her surgery. So, but that's stress. Like she has a high stress job.
Well, we just did a study on, or we just covered a study on stress, mm-hmm. and how a moment of stress, a stressful event, can last up to 2 days.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it depletes you of magnesium, which is important for helping you sleep, among many other bodily functions. But when you are having stressful event after stressful event after stressful, and then it's chronic stress,
right,
you're never going to sleep well.
Well, yeah. And you have to think about the things that are still good for you that do cause cortisol to rise in the body, mm-hmm. being exercise and dieting. But if you're managing them in all of the other ways, then those are cortisol levels that can be brought down by a healthy lifestyle, the revamp, the refuel, whatever it needs to be. But yeah, I think that people look at me and will say, well, I'm not quitting my job. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm not asking you to quit your job. But maybe we can sleep more than 3 hours, or maybe you can stop the CrossFit for a little bit. And maybe just start some walks to let your body kind of heal. You're already not sleeping, and then you're going into a form of exercise where your body is being incredibly broken down and you're not having the chance. Like, I can't tell you how many clients I say, I want you to go walk. Just do your exercise this week, walking, especially females. And they're like, whoa, Like, I've never felt like my sorry, I forgot this was here. My face go feel not puffy or whatever it may be. And that's lowering cortisol levels. So it's many, many factors, but stress being the primary one, I would say.
Interesting. Another thing I had pulled up here, I had done a review of your website, and you have a section.
Are you going to go to the recipes?
Recipes.
They're terrible. Don't look at those. Oh,
okay. Well, never mind.
Here's why. No, I have an explanation. So 2 years ago, you're like, that's not where I thought this was going. 2 years ago, I started working on my cookbook and like full on food photographer. And I have a hard copy at my house. And then I had a baby. It's done. It's fully done. There are 75 or 88, I can't remember how many, different recipes in there. And all of those were on my website. I created about probably 40 new ones for the book. So I took those out and I really just need to like close down that section. And those were a lot of the ones. I went through a paleo era back while I was trying to get into recovery. So I tried to create a lot of paleo recipes and my family now makes a lot of fun of me because they weren't very good. So yes, it is there. But I do have an app for my online women's weight loss community. A lot of the recipes are in that. We have an e-cookbook with like 100 different meal like 100 different meal options. So yeah, I do have that section. Some of them are good in there, but they're not my best because lots of them are in the cookbook.
So they just need to be updated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably just need to be filtered through.
What about the French toast one?
Oh, I have a much better French toast one in the cookbook. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll just give a link to all of your listeners too.
Oh, that'd be nice.
But yeah, I do have a pretzel bread French toast in my cookbook that is actually on the cover. Yeah. So.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well, yeah. I will say the comment I was going to make on this was basically just that I thought it was a great thing for you to offer and
thank
do
you.
To give them away on your website.
He was going to give me a compliment and I just put myself down. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, and you know, in your cookbook, whatever.
Well, she's just trying to maintain a level of professionalism and she's always bettering herself. So that's why she says
that's
that.
True. We thank all you. Are constantly improving. The trainer that I was 3 or 4 years ago, you know, like you said, that guy is dumb.
Yeah,
you want to be able to go back and look and be like, wow, I've come a long way.
Yeah,
in all areas. So if you can't look back and say that, then you're probably still doing it wrong.
Exactly.
So
always got to be improving.
Absolutely,
making yourself better. Just like you talked about with a client, you know, you want them to a little bit better every day. We've got to do that to ourselves too.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, especially as being examples within the industry. So, yeah. You can definitely go check them out, but don't feel like you're going to be blown out of the water.
So. Well, Jordan, we thank you for coming on today.
Absolutely. It was a great time. We had a good conversation. Sorry if I derailed where this was.
No, that was me. That was totally me. I was like, man, I want to get into it. And I was just like, I want to ask this, I want to ask this, I want to ask this. would you be open to coming on again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about some mice next time.
No.
Oh, okay.
That was just a fit focus.
Different.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Different study. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, absolutely. It was a great time. You guys do a great job and, hopefully people got some good stuff out of it.
Yeah.
So we went a lot of different directions. So
yeah, it's like we kind of just hit the tip of the iceberg on a lot of different things. And I feel like we could definitely.
Well, just to let you know, I had about 20 questions here and I got through two.
So. I'm sorry.
No. That happens all the time.
Okay, but good.
I always have some questions there in case for some reason the guest is like
struggling.
And so, but I don't have that problem. So
yeah, no, sorry. You won't ever catch me probably not talking.
No, that'll be, it's one, it was great.
Good.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Tons of great information. I even learned some stuff.
Good. So. Thank you guys. You guys
great information for our listeners too.
Thank you.
Because they're always asking questions, you know, and we have a basic knowledge and understanding, you know, we've worked on our own nutrition a lot in our lives. We can work with people, but having somebody that knows it at a depth that you do is a great perk for all the listeners.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a great time and hopefully they got something out of it. So. Yeah.
Well, good. How can they contact you if they would like to contact you?
They can go to my website and then I have a contact section where it'll just send me send me an email. So
okay, and that website, if you just Googled your, or is it, it's a jml-nutrition.com, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the website, guys, if you'd like to get into contact with her.
Yeah, she knows what she's talking about, so reach out to her.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, well, Jordan, thanks for coming on. Everybody, thanks for listening, and we will be back with another episode next week. This was episode 25. It's in the books. We'll be back with 26 next week.
All right, take care.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.